issues of concern for corporate media here in the U.S. You know, if it was like a communist country that was having these things go down, they would have been on the news every second. But there was almost no news of what was going on with the strike. National Public Radio never discussed in any detail at all, if at all. I mean, many days they never even mentioned the strike during most of the strike, and when they did, it was very brief. And
we had the same thing with media here for the campground. Although actually, that the spin masters have now taken over at the campground, the open air shelter in Santa Cruz, where we're being told that this was such a health emergency because there was leaky porta potties and water spilling on the ground and dog feces, and the whole place was flooded. When in fact, a day later, the place had you know been drained, mostly due to the campers' work as well as the work of the sun. They essentially brought in a pump. They, not being the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the owners of the property and the managers of the program, but the people here who live in the campground, the head of the Citizens Committee guy who was handling it, Paul Merceau, who heads the open-air shelter, gleefully showed the media a flooded porta-potty to indicate it was such a health hazard that he had to close down the property, when in fact, he was showing them a porta-potty that he had declined to repair for the last month and a half.
Whoa.
And was defective for that very reason. You know, it's... at least that's what the campers told me.
Yeah, that's kind of typical of government fiascos. You've got, the Arcata case. You've got the mayor of Arcata who's saying that it's nothing to do with the city of Arcata. They don't care about this whole issue. It's that they're just enforcing state health laws.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, the state, what he fails to mention is that the state of California health laws clearly state that organizations like Food Not Bombs can share food out on the streets without a permit. I mean, that's pretty, people in Santa Cruz have pointed that out repeatedly. And it's,
state health codes were the pretext for going after Food Not Bombs here in Santa Cruz. Again, it wasn't really, had nothing to do with health. It was simply a law plucked from the book that would do the job of, hopefully in their mind, harassing and intimidating people who were trying to serve free food in a public place, partially in protest of the city's sleeping ban and the troll busting incidents that were happening, the attacks on homeless people.
Right. Now that's the whole trip in all these different communities that are going after groups like Food Not Bombs and the homeless, is that they do come up with these funny pretexts. I mean, if they're really so worried about the health of the homeless, why are they not taking all the abandoned facilities in Santa Cruz and opening them up to the homeless?
Right.
I mean, they can house every homeless person in Santa Cruz with their own apartment.
Well, that's what Mayor Kennedy has suggested as a solution. As he closed the campground, he suggested that people take a homeless person into their backyard, sort of adopt a homeless pet for Christmas, perhaps.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yes. He didn't put it that way, of course. And I'm not aware that he's offered to do that recently.
But
nonetheless, that seems to be the solution.
Right.
Face-saving or ass-saving or just sort of... the diversity suggestion.
Well, it is a real problem for these people because they, you know, the lower level guys that are these mayors of these cities and stuff, they really, it's out of their hands. They really don't know what they're doing. They don't get the whole global austerity program trip, and that they themselves are going to be victims of that. You know, they don't need to be providing city services anymore, so just get rid of them. You know, it's like a corporate, controlled world trip that's happening.
I gotcha.
You get they're so upset about the health of the homeless or in Arcata about serving, that they might get sick eating fresh vegetarian meals, but they keep giving a rubber stamp to KFC to keep handing out genetically engineered poultry, you know. So
it all links together, but right now I got to run on you because I'm.
You got a show to do.
I got a show to do, and hey, I got a room to dredge out here, and then I got to hustle out to the campground. All these wonderful things to do. I want to thank you though, Keith McHenry, for being on the air again at such short notice, and maybe we can get some of your activists down here next week to support the campground, which, as I said, they are planning to close Sunday or Monday, so if you can get the word out for people to come to Santa Cruz.
Wow, Sunday or Monday, okay.
Yeah. We don't have a firm date, and after that, we're hoping if enough of us hang together, we'll be doing demonstrations downtown. Since they're driving people downtown, then perhaps that's where they should pitch their tents.
Wow, that's very interesting. Well, people are certainly encouraged to come up to the protest on Saturday, January 6th here, and then join a caravan up to Arcata to the courthouse there, which will be actually going to Eureka, to the county courthouse in Eureka, and support of the six people that are facing 30 days for feeding the hungry in Arcata, California.
And I guess one last bit of good news is that I've heard from my attorney David Beauvais in Berkeley that he's going to attempt to get new DA of San Francisco, Terrence Hallinan, to agree to a stipulated reversal of the verdict.
Wow,
at my trial, which may mean that I may be able to just feed wantonly and rabidly whenever the mood hits me.
Right, that's pretty fantastic.
Isn't
it? I'm excited about that.
All right.
I know, I think there's a lot, and it's one of these funny little, very rare examples of electropolitics working in our favor. Generally speaking, it's a complete and utter disaster.
Well, listen, thank you, and yeah. I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, have fun. Bye.
And that, of course, was Keith McHenry in San Francisco about 10 days ago in a somewhat delayed interview. We've been having lots of stuff preempting it, and you finally got to hear it. Now, from time to time, I read you selections from the street poet Julia Vinograd, who's also known as the Bubble Lady of Berkeley. I have a poem here today that seems to me particularly fitting. There was a death out at the campground, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, a man named Harry. Apparently, he died. And I want to read this poem in his honor. I didn't know him very well, but I'm sure some people did. For Gypsy, who died. When I first heard, I laughed, a street girl told me. I said, Gypsy dies every year, don't you know? Gypsy can't die. And he can't. Not the man who drank so much he lost all his teeth and strung them on a necklace and danced in front of a scrawled graffiti that said, Lil Gypsy is an embarrassment to all street people, grinning and drinking and dancing straight-backed and handsome till the necklace broke and then dancing faster. And we danced with him. Not the man who stood patiently on his head while a friend asked a passerby, could you spare a dime to get this man back on his feet? And when someone gave, Gypsy turned a somersault and laughed, fists raised triumphantly to the sky. Not the man who made himself a costume of harlequin leather patches and always wore his head as if his hat had an outlaw's plume, even if he didn't have a hat. He could swagger when he couldn't walk. Not the man who set hearts and trash cans on fire, who caused every kind of trouble, including love, including laughter. Not the man who blew the Jolly Roger from the shopping cart or flew the Jolly Roger from the shopping cart that held all his belongings. Not the man who fought with everyone and between fights his own body beat him up with epileptic seizures and Vietnam flashbacks. But life rejoiced in him. He was a shout sewn up in skin. And Gypsy could never be counted on is counting on us. As long as we give a cop up the bird, as long as we plant a flower in People's Park, as long as we stand a friend to drink, as long as we laugh at trouble, Gypsy can't die. That's For Gypsy Who Died, from Julia Vinograd's book, Street Samurai. And now a little bit of music from Les Miserables about revolution.
Sanctions are prepared to debunk this training at the least. Students, workers, everyone, there's a river on the run. Like the flowing of a tide, Paris calming to our side.
The time is near. So near, it's stirring the blood in their veins. And yet beware.
the wine go to your brains. For the army we fight is a dangerous foe, with the men in the arms that we never can match. Oh, it's easy to sit here and swat them like flies, but the National Guard will be harder to catch. We need a sign to rally the people, to call them to arms, to bring them in line.
We do need a sign, and we do need to rally the people. But let's hear what's happening out at the campground this Christmas. A couple days ago, this recording was made. People have been showing up at the New Brighton Beach campground, which is a state campground out in Capitola, a place to which the River Street refugees were bused and will be legal for at least another 6 days, 7 days, I guess. Let's hear what's going on out there. Here's a fellow who arrived with a gift for the campers.
Army, put down a poncho, put your fart sack on the poncho, and put another one over the top of it.
So let me get this down exactly.
What's your first name?
Bundy. You'll never forget that.
Okay, Bundy, you heard the KSCO show the other night with Dan Hopkins.
Yeah.
And you have some advice for him on how to avoid getting cold.
Am I going to be on? You just put down a rubber poncho on the ground, put your sleeping bag down on it, get in it, and then put another poncho over the top of you. It keeps all the body heat in.
So two ponchos are going to do it.
I slept in the snow in the military and many times like that.
I also like to point out you just brought a couple of tarps for people who are wet to help them keep out of the wet.
I
want to thank you for that.
Those ponchos, I'm going to get some more.
All right. So you're getting famous. Everybody wants to take your picture.
We would like to.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, of course. And this is
to New York.
Yeah, the Donahue show is next.
Oh.
It's December 22nd. We're out here at the campground. It's about 3:30 and 15 to 4, and there's a meeting of campers trying to decide what to do next.
Oh, yeah.
So there are about 20 people at the meeting around the campfire here. Everyone's kind of comfortable. There's firewood up against the tree. Folks sitting under a tarp. Four community operatives here, Barbara Woolman, Cherry Connable, Charlie Phillips with the camera, and myself. And the discussion has been around the basic issue, what to do after January 1st. Mayor Rapkin didn't offer any assistance today on the radio, so campers are wondering what to do next.
Well, everybody's here. Does anybody have any real unfuckwith plain aspirin? Excuse my American.
Ibuprofen?
No, aspirin.
Real aspirin.
Ibuprofen doesn't work on my migraine.
Yeah, I've
Could I get about three aspirin?
Yeah.
I've been up all night with this damn headache.
Right.
I'm about blind.
I've just been talking to Aptos Homeless. We're not an official organization or anything, but do you people think with a farm would be better for us? Or some raw land, we can make a camp.
Any place that we're not going to get arrested would be a great place for us.
We could be a place we can get in and out of, and get food, and get things easily. Being out in the middle of, huh?
It has to be on a bus line.
Well, definitely, if it's not downtown or somewhere. I mean, that was one of the things about the back 40s, that you can walk to any place.
Yeah.
But,
with the carbon monoxide poisoning and the...
Oh, I agree. It's not the place, but it needs to be somewhere centrally located. It would be more advantageous to lifestyle.
Okay, like the major power there is around here is Chamber of Commerce. They run the police department. Basically, they're the businesses of the community. And, if all these people got costumes, they'd pay you to go play in the mall. You know, sing Christmas songs and stuff.
Do you have any place identified out in this area that would might be a place where people could play?
We all hide out in bushes and vans and...
But any piece of land that would be near this bus?
I was thinking up by Henry Cow Park. There's some land for sale, which is raw land, but you know, it wouldn't be hard to make a road. You know, just some shovels.
Nice East Mark Park, something like that.
And you're listening to the River Street Refugees, a tape made last Friday, two or three days ago, right after the Rotkin interview on, well, 3 or 4 hours later, where campers kind of took stock.
But on the air right now, I have with me the inimitable Skidmarks Bob. Hi, Bob.
Happy Xmas.
Hey, guy.
How are you?
All right. You know, it's good to hear you, though you never called me back at your Wednesday show. I was going to do an incredible update.
I forgot.
Hey,
Dan was there, and so he kind of like gave the update.
He filled in. Oh, that's good. You're talking about Dragon Tar, Dan.
Wasn't the same, though.
What's that?
Wasn't the same.
Nah, no one could take the place of Uncle Robert here.
I got a little bit of news and demo that's going to be happening.
Cool.
Evidently, a couple people got kicked out of your favorite place, Java House, yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if you know John Leslie, them and their kid.
I think I do, actually.
Well, he was buying coffee for people that were outside that have been banned from Java House.
Right.
And they came out and accosted him, actually grabbed him and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm buying coffee for these people." He says, "You can't do that." He says, "I could do whatever I want to do." So basically got into this confrontation.
You know who it was that kicked him out?
Some guy named Stuart.
Oh, yeah. Stuart is the assistant manager. He was the man who called the police on me in a trespass call about 2 years ago.
Right.
In Java House, actually.
Yeah. So basically, some other people had some problems that day, too. Dean of Earth First and stuff. And so they're going to put a little demo together on tomorrow,
cool.
2 p.m. at the job, in front of the Java House.
2 p.m., that's 2 p.m., December 26th.
Yes.
In front of the Java House. You have the address of the Java House for those people who don't know about it?
I don't know that. I don't know. Across from the parking garage. What is that, Locust or something?
I think it's Locust and Cedar Streets, right across from, it's around the corner from the Cafe Bene, around the other corner from India Joe's restaurant.
Yeah.
It's across the street from the Metro Santa Cruz offices, if you know where those are.
Yeah.
It's a big coffee house which has pretensions to kind of liberal, hip atmosphere. It has a kind of a liberal, hip look to some extent. But they've been kicking out homeless activists regularly, and not just kicking them out. I mean, you can understand if somebody has a problem, well, hey, go away for a week and come back, go away for a month maybe and come back. Wanton Dave Jacobs, who is a homeless activist downtown for 4 or 5 years, was kicked out for 4 years. He's still kicked out. And his crime was, get this, smoking a joint half a block away on the sidewalk because a planning commissioner walked by and thought it might give the Java House a bad name.
This isn't the same planning commissioner got caught with all the pot, was it?
I don't know that. You know, who knows who it was, but it was certainly the same planning commission. They were concerned the Java House was, the owner of the Java House or one of the co-owners, a guy called Kevin, who I call him Kick Him Out Kevin now.
Yeah.
Because he does that kind of thing. And he had me kicked out, and he had the meandering Mike Girth kicked out. He had numerous other people kicked out.
Right.
I think it's high time the Java House had, that there was a focus on what they're doing there.
Especially around this season and all.
Oh, yeah.
Especially yesterday. I mean, they kicked people out for buying, homeless people outside coffee. So
I'm going to have to dig up some of my old flyers and maybe kind of add that to the mix. And, while you're on the phone, Bob, have you heard about the incident at Stuart Martin's ID building?
No, I haven't.
Well, I could tell you and I could tell the audience at the same time. Stuart Martin is the manager of the ID building, which is a large business right across from the bookshop Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue. And in my book, it's still a target for the boycott bigotry campaign that I announced as part of Huff's campaign against the downtown anti-homeless laws last year. But Stuart Martin's claim to fame, for which he got a wanted poster made up by me and others in Huff and posted, he's got a number of claims to fame. He's got one claim to fame against you as well as me, as I understand it.
Oh, yeah.
He had both of us arrested for allegedly disturbing the peace when those were First Amendment protected protest activities. We both were jailed, even though no charges eventually were pursued in court. Although we were threatening and were under the fear of facing 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for this so-called misdemeanor disturbing the peace charge. Martin has also resulted in sending two people to jail. One of them was B.D., or David Dumars, back in February of 1994, when Dumars was drawing public attention to the fact that a peace vigil was being illegally disrupted, disbanded, and kidnapped, and broken up by police, who were arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk even before there was a no-sitting law.
Right.
And Stuart Martin rushed across the street and assaulted this guy, David Dumars, and then turned around and lied to the police and said that that he, in fact, had been assaulted himself.
Yeah.
And actually, Dumars was acquitted of assault. He was convicted of something else, around a couple of other things around that. And Martin has also sent Chris Brazda to jail. Brazda, of course, is a volatile personality who himself has been, you know, in my opinion, violent on occasion. My cheek still stings from one incident of that violence. But Martin, he wasn't, I don't believe he was violent to Martin on this occasion, but Martin nonetheless had him sent to jail. Now, recently, Linda LeMaster, who's a local activist, I call her Lighthouse Linda, was out on the streets, I guess it was on the 22nd, I ran into her in the coffee roasting company. She told me that what she observed was Martin shoving a homeless man down the street. And this was the young guy, a guy named Chris, who sits across from the Santa Cruz 6 cinema, and with a little sign about asking for spare change. You may have seen him on occasion. He's,
right.
He's a youth. He and his girlfriend were harassed, abused, and literally assaulted by Martin inside the ID building. Actually, he was assaulted himself outside, but he was confronted by Martin when he was trying to purchase some stuff. Martin said, you're a thief. All homeless people are thieves.
Wow.
And he said the same thing to his, he said something similar to the girlfriend, as I understand it, when she came in later. And then when he saw him on the street after the guy called the police because Martin had evicted him and harassed him, he shoved him some more in public. And we tried to file a complaint with two police officers, and the police officers told us that the matter had already been dealt with, you know.
Wow.
So we're thinking of a demonstration again. Maybe we can combine demonstrations, do one at the ID building and kind of go back and forth.
It's interesting you mention Stewart, because I don't know if you noticed yesterday's Sentinel, but on the front page there was a picture of, yes, yours truly, Deputy Chief Locke, Jeff Locke,
mm-hmm.
sitting in the ID building deciding what he's going to buy for Christmas. And it's this big, giant story about how, something about how men are now opening up and being able to shop and being able to consume not just women, but men can come out and buy gifts for their loved ones and stuff. And it has Jeff Locke on the front page sitting there looking stupid in the ID building deciding what he's going to buy.
Wow.
So
these guys who run the Sentinel have no conception of the kind of context in which they're placing things. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
So your demonstration, or I should say our demonstration, the demonstration of anybody concerned about rights of people in the Java House, is happening tomorrow at 2.
Tomorrow at 2?
And I'm going to, I'll talk to people and see if they want to expand maybe that demonstration to Stuart Martin's ID building. And who knows, we also might even throw in the issue of the right to sleep. After all, it's not just Brighton Beach campers that are going to be shat upon on the 1st, it's everybody who gets the shat.
Yes.
And every night here in Santa Cruz, where it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Yes, it is. Could I speak to you off the air now?
Sure.
Okay.
Before you do, let me first put on a little something. We'll continue with the meeting out at the Brighton State Beach campground of the River Street Refugees while Bob and I have a little powwow.
There's no water up there. It's all creek water and it's contaminated.
There's a place in Watsonville where an old man and his nephew have some land, and about 20, 25 people have been living out there off and on for 20 years.
We don't want you to go to the
It's way off the road, though, I'll tell you. It's miles from the nearest buses and stuff.
I've been studying real estate, sort of, and in rural land, this is good to remember for, you know, when you head off to somewhere else if you do. In rural land, all you do is make monthly payments. You don't have to come up with a big, giant down payment, according to what I've heard. And so, if we can get up the first month, then we'd be set. You know, because then like some people on Social Security can afford some
payments. Down payment is the hard part there.
Some welfare money.
The percentage that you have to pay in advance.
I'm not too much interested in owning the earth, and that's one of the issues to me that's always been part of this thing here, is the right for people to occupy the earth, the land. It's not being used for the
peaceful, healthy thing.
There's a thing called the Community Land Trust, where the land is not owned by anybody, but is governed by a board, which is, you know, constituted of the residents, who constitute one-third of the board, representatives from the community, and specialists like environmentalists, bankers, real estate people. So that's like land held in trust for in perpetuity. So that would be a way of getting the land setting up as a community land trust, and the residents would have a lot of control, but they wouldn't exactly own the land. The land would technically belong to the whole community, and the community would have input into what was done.
But it would be held in perpetuity, never to be bought and sold for commercial reasons. So I've heard of a 100-year lease from railroad companies. I had a friend, he was really into that, and he disappeared, so he must have found something. But $99 for a 100-year lease, that's pretty good. You know, the Catholic Church, I heard, that owns a lot of the land. Are they part of the United Council churches?
Yeah, some of them, yeah.
And one thing we could do, or you could do, is, you know, identify some piece of land where you could locate temporarily, and you begin to investigate all the possibilities and put it out to the community, you know, that you're investigating the possibility of setting up,
you know. Yeah, but anyway, we should have
that done between the second. The second is pretty similar. The trouble is it's hard to negotiate with the community since they're all, you know, they've disappeared into other communities, they're being with their families. I mean,
yeah,
this is a
Christmas thing.
They're doing their Christmas thing, yeah.
It's not a great time.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to get in touch with them. But if you put it out to the community, you know, you're going to occupy some piece of land for chambering, and you can explore other possibilities.
So I've heard real estate, it's a company that handles real estate. I'm always watching commercial rentals for like a warehouse or something like that. And also I watch the rural land. And Thunderbird handles most of the rural land around here. They have the most ads anyway.
Thunderbird Realty?
Yeah.
It's a yard.
So what you're saying is if we put out a public statement that we're thinking about occupying other pieces of land, you think that might spur community leaders or civic authorities to consider other possibilities, sort of like just, you know, extort them a little bit.
I was thinking the 2 months, the first 2 months would be that would be all it takes, huh? And after that, charge people $1 a day.
Is that what you're saying, Bob?
Yeah, I think it should be, before you announce you're going to occupy people, I think it should be in the form of you're interested in getting permission. I mean, ask for permission first. They don't give permission, and if we go ahead and illegally occupy land, I think the steps would be to put together.
Okay, we're interrupting this Campground River Street Refugee tape from last Friday because on a line with us here in the studio, she's having Christmas breakfast, is Brimstone Barbara, Riverwoman, who has been a long-time community activist in the Santa Cruz community. Back in 1989, about this time, she was a week later, she was being arrested for sleeping in or sitting in or, I don't know, hanging out at an annex at River Street Shelter in order to open up that annex to homeless youth, and that was a successful occupation. She and nine other people were either arrested or cited, and within 2 weeks, that annex was opened. That was back on New Year's Eve, 1989. Hey, Barbara.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
So you've been spending a lot of your time in the last 2 months, as have I for that matter, trying to draw public attention to the situation of particularly homeless campers and particularly the group of campers who were trying to make a life for themselves out of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Right.
What's going on with that now?
Well, as you probably know, the campers right now are out at New Brighton. And I think right now there's a kind of sense of euphoria because the amount of media attention that's been given them has brought in a lot of people who people have been bringing donations, you know, hams and turkeys and cookies, and one woman has been washing their laundry, you know, taking it home, washing it, bringing it back, all folded. People have been donating lots of firewood. There's one company called the Tree Company, which has been there almost every day bringing firewood. So whenever you go out to visit them at New Brighton, there's, you know, fires burning all over the campsite. So it has at least on the surface, it has a warm, happy feeling.
Yeah, I was out there last night. It's campsite 65. Actually, I think there are four campsites. But everyone was kind of sitting around the campfire, else in their tents. It was kind of late. I got in late. My car is broken down as I'm informing the audience, so I kind of got a ride. And yeah, it looked like a real cheery scene. I guess they're having a Christmas meal out there this morning.
I think it's this afternoon at 2.
At 2?
They've invited all of the homeless people from down at the free meal. I don't know whether, you know, how many people are going to be out there. But I think they really want to share their good fortune with other people who, you know, haven't been so fortunate. And this is a very small group of people who have kind of been lucky. I mean, they deserve what they got, because they did resist and hold the ground after they were told to move off that site, and they refused. And to their credit, and one of the outcomes of that is that they were bussed out to New Brighton. That resistance set this whole thing in motion. I don't think most people who are you know, bringing them donations realize that this is a group of people who have resisted.
Oh yeah, their resistance began, at least a much larger group of people also resisted as early as November 2nd when they tried to drive people off, and then again on throughout the month of November they indicated they were going to resist, and you yourself convened meetings between city council members, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the property owners, I guess community organizations like HUF, and the campers, who were then organized in a group called Save Our Shelter, and four different meetings in San Lorenzo Park at that time.
Yeah, those were the duck pond meetings. We tried really hard, you know, to follow due process and really involve the Citizens Committee and the city council in dialogue about, you know, what the outcome of this should be. In the end, both the city council and the citizens committee, I think, on one level or another, betrayed the efforts we were trying to make.
Was your impression, Barbara, that I know Scott Kennedy was at a number of these meetings. There was Scott Kennedy, Celia Scott, and Catherine Byers, who was at that time, for most of the time, mayor. Kennedy repeatedly said that he didn't favor a winter campground, but he also gave me the impression, and I think I wondered if you had the impression too, that he would not obstruct an agreement between the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the campers. Did you have that sense or not?
It seems to me that all along the city council people were saying, this is out of our hands. This is a decision that has to be made by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I mean, it seemed to me that they were saying, we can't do anything, you know. If the Citizens Committee is going to close this, then we have to stand behind them. There's nothing we can do. So all along, they were claiming that they were helpless in the process. And then on, what was the date?
They closed it on December 12th, one day after a rain.
Right, December 12th, suddenly they turn around and Mike Rockin takes, you know, full responsibility for closing the campground, although he said, or somebody said, that it was essentially Paul Marceau's call.
And Paul
Marceau is the executive director of Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And I think Paul Marceau, if I'm not mistaken, was the person who actually called the meeting with Mike Rockin. Is that your understanding, or was it the city council that called the meeting on the 12th, morning of the 12th?
You know, actually, Rockin was not there when the camp was closed. It was Scott Kennedy who was backing up. You remember that when Paul Marceau was declaring the campground closed. What interested me was.
But he had met earlier with Mike Rockin.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because I don't recall
Rockin
that part of the conversation.
Yeah, they had met earlier with Mike Rockin. Scott accompanied Paul Marceau, you know, down to the campground. To his credit, I suppose, he was willing to take the heat. But the meeting had been called, I think the meeting had been called by Mike Rockin, or maybe initiated by Paul Marceau. called to Mike Rodkin, but it was the city. It was Mike Rodkin who closed the campground after declaring that they didn't have that power. Now, of course, they were saying that they were closing it for health reasons, but that's actually the call of the county. If anybody's to close it on the grounds of health hazards, that should be, as I understand it, the responsibility of the county. So I don't quite understand.
Well, even more confusing than that was what Mike Rodkin said to all of us publicly 5 days later on Saturday, which was 2 days before the actual time when they threatened to bring in the police and then bust everybody up to New Brighton Beach. And what Mike Rodkin then said to the campers was, it wasn't really he that was closing the campground, it was the city staff that was closing the campground, that was making those decisions. And he also said that even if the Citizens Committee for the Homeless wanted to keep the campground open, that we would have to somehow go to the city to get permission to keep it open, even though the city has not had a permit for the campground, or I should say the Citizens Committee has not had a permit for the last year and a quarter, and it was just by the city's looking the other way that the campground stayed open. In other words, he seemed to be contradicting himself and using whatever rules he wanted to suit himself at the moment, saying that he would keep it open if he wanted to keep it open, and if he didn't want to keep it open, he wouldn't, even though he said he didn't have the power, but then he did have the power, then it was the city staff that had the power. In other words, they were batting it back and forth.
You know, the long and short of it is that they've all been just looking for an excuse since the very beginning to close this thing down, and that big rain was just the excuse they were looking for. And, you know, whether they attribute it to the Citizens Committee, or they attribute it to the city, or the city staff, and they all seem to be wanting to, you know, blame it on somebody else because nobody wants to take the responsibility, especially at Christmas, for closing down and evicting, you know, 40 or 50 or 60 homeless people. The truth is they've just been dying, I think, for an excuse to get those people out of there. And this was the excuse they needed, and they jumped on it.
I think so. And what you've been doing out at the campground, as I understand, based on this meeting that I've been playing for our audience here over the air from last Friday, is campers have been looking for an alternate site, of course, probably with not too much success. How's that been going?
Well, let's see. 2 days ago, we had a meeting out at the campground around a campfire.
That's what we're playing here on the air today.
Uh-huh. Great. And we talked about what folks wanted to do once, you know, January 1st rolled around. And it's going to roll around pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was considerable support for the idea of looking for an alternate site and proposing an alternate site to the council people and to the county and to the city of Capitola. I think there's the feeling that this shouldn't necessarily be, you know, something that is undertaken solely by the city of Santa Cruz, although we still, you know, think we can hold the city of Santa Cruz responsible. But I think we need to get on the case of the county. They've been unbelievably bigoted in their response to this whole thing. The article came out in the Chronicle this morning. Did you see it?
Oh, boy.
Somebody representing the Neighborhood Association, somebody called Ogre or something. Ogre, that's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Ogre sounds better.
Ogre sounds better. You know, put it, I mean, at least they're honest about what they're thinking. He said, you know, this affects our property values. We don't want our property values to be
negatively influenced.
Negatively influenced by the onslaught of homeless.
Human beings in need.
It's just disgusting. Anyway, I think we ought to put a little bit of pressure on Capitola and Aptos and Soquel and the county.
Well, what should the community do to support the campers in anticipation of this January 1st eviction date?
Well, that's a good question. I think the best thing people can do is come out, meet the campers, and become involved. We really need more support, and we really need more support from people in Capitola and Aptos, and, you know, throughout the county, not just Santa Cruz. It's not, Mike Rodkin put it, you know, well when he said, you know, people think that somehow Santa Cruz is generating homeless people. It's not Santa Cruz that's generating homeless people. Santa Cruz attracts homeless people because Santa Cruz offers some minimal services, and nobody else is undertaking their share of the burden. And I think, you know, one of the directions that the homeless movement needs to take in Santa Cruz County is begin to challenge some of the some of the
prejudices. Some of the prejudices.
Well, and some of the prejudices. I mean, the bigotry that's surfacing because of, you know, 2 weeks in New Brighton State Park is unbelievable.
Well, there's some of us who are concerned that come January 1st, campers are going to be really left to their own devices, and they'll be told to disperse, and without any significant community support, they may find themselves forced to do just that. And of course, you know, for that's a group of 40-odd campers. Really, the question for me is a much larger one of the hundreds and hundreds of homeless people in Santa Cruz who no longer have access to the open-air shelter at Coral Street, who are illegal every night on the street after 11 o'clock at night when they go to sleep. And
right. There's a lot of people who never made it out to New Brighton, you know, who weren't allowed on that bus. And where are they going to sleep? You know, there's no community concern. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're all getting fed at the Veterans Hall today. There is community concern, but minimal.
If people want to come to contribute stuff to New Brighton Beach and can't get out there, can they contact you and leave stuff with you?
Absolutely. My number is
425.
5939.
There you go. 425.
It's ready.
Do it again.
425-5939. I would just love to hear from people in the community who could give us support. You know, whether it's blankets and sleeping bags and tents, or whether it's financial support, or whether it's moral support, or whether people would like to become part of the organizing group that's trying to support these campers in their, you know, struggle to stay together as a community and, you know, push on to get some permanent site for their campground.
And if you're interested in broader issues of homeless rights downtown, you can also call HUF at 423-HUF, 423-4833, which is, again, trying to organize demonstrations downtown around broader issues of criminalization of people on the streets and criminalization of homeless people at night who are essentially engaging in innocent behavior.
Right.
I also should let you know, Barbara, to pass on to the campers that there is a demonstration planned tomorrow at the Java House. Actually, it has nothing to do with HUF. It was independently formed by John and Leslie, who were told to leave the Java House because they went outside and bought coffee for people who were not allowed in the Java House.
Oh, my.
So there's going to be tomorrow at 2, tomorrow on Tuesday at 2, people are going to be doing a demonstration outside the Java House, and there was also an incident outside the ID building where Stuart Martin, who is the manager of the ID building, said to a homeless man who was trying to buy something that all homeless people are thieves, and then shoved him down the street. So there may be some issues at Christmas time around discrimination against the homeless that will be focused on tomorrow at 2 o'clock in front of the Java House.
Good work, Robert. I just wanted to say that I just started reading this morning Celine Pascal's master's thesis. And it looks like a, you know, really, really important thing. And one of the things she says right at the beginning is how we make the homeless invisible. But even if people give them a handout as they walk by, they don't engage with them, they don't look them in the eye, they don't treat them as human beings. I think it's just endemic to our society that we somehow cannot psychologically deal with the phenomenon of homelessness. And I think we have a lot of work spiritually to do in this community. And this is a good day, Christmas Day. This is a very good day to start, you know, looking at our own attitudes about, you know, who these homeless are, why there are homeless people, and how we as a society respond to homeless people. We certainly don't do a very good job.
That's true. It is the truth. So, again, give a call to Barbara Riverwoman, whom we're speaking to on the phone, at 425-5939 if you have anything you want to donate to the New Brighton Beach campers, if you simply want to more information, if you want to be a part of the support group that is supporting them. I guess they're calling themselves the River Street Refugees now.
Right.
And if you want to contact, if you want to be involved in these demonstrations, either come on down at 2 o'clock, you can come down at 2 o'clock today to New Brighton Beach to be a part of the campground and the dinner that's going on, particularly if you're homeless. I presume that they won't turn away a non-homeless person either, but you might want to bring something if you're non-homeless and you have some resources. Or you can also show up tomorrow at 2 in front of the Java House to consider the situation of people who are willing to pay or willing to be ordinary citizens and who are denied that opportunity by
Stuart and Kevin, who are the managers and or owners of the Java House, have been harassing homeless people and turning away homeless activists, and maybe we should find a way to confront them on this issue.
Thanks for supporting them on this, Robert.
Hey, and let the campers know that's happening for me.
Yeah, I will.
Because I haven't got a car, and I'm not getting out there. I don't think today I'm going to be kind of on foot.
If you want a ride, I'd be glad to give you a ride, Robert.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, hey, maybe I'll call you after the show's over, and we'll see what's cooking.
Okay.
Thank you, Barbara.
All right. Bye-bye.
So you are on the air. I'm on the air. You can be on the air. Hey, it's 96.3 FM here down in Santa Cruz. It's pirate radio. It's free radio. It's your radio. And the lines are open, 427-3772. If you'd like to call in, 427-3772. We are talking about the rights of poor people to such elementary things as the right to sleep at night, the right to have their contracts kept between them and the service providers that they have made deals with, the right not to be discriminated against at restaurants. These are the issues that we've been talking about here, and we talk about every Monday and Friday from 10 to 12 on Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, or the Robe, as I call myself, because I have been known to sport a bathrobe in street demonstrations to symbolize the right of people to sleep and the need of people to sleep who are outside and who are being denied that right here in Santa Cruz, out in Capitola, and in other cities across this country. And I want to see that changed. I want to see Santa Cruz begin that change, because we have the resources to do it. We have the will to do it. We have the compassion and the heart to do it. And I hope we have the common sense to do it. That's what I'm looking for. So, I was playing for you an interview before. Actually, not an interview. I was playing for you the a meeting that was happening out at River Street. And I kind of, unfortunately, I'm not doing too well in the queuing today. So, we're going to kind of dip into that interview again. And perhaps we'll get in there at an interesting spot.
Because if we just say we want to go somewhere, well, but if we can say we looked at these four places and any of these places would work, if we could go there, then we have something to start